Welcome to Monsters and Mechanics. This is episode 4, and I am Micah Walker. I'm from Eastern Iowa, and I play Minoth.
Go ahead, Tim.
My name's Tim. I am currently playing Convergence, and I'm from Des Moines.
Hello, and my name is Elias, and I'm back on Red. So we're going to go ahead and start off this evening. We're going to be discussing some of our old lists. So, or not our old list, but our list that we built last time and got a chance to play a few times over the last week or two. Which one of you guys would like to go ahead and start talking about how our list is in?
If I remember right, Micah, you had 4 games in with your list, so you want to talk about that quick?
I'll go ahead. Yeah, so my list was with Anston Durst in Faithful Masses. He had 2 Indictors, 2 Sanctifiers, a Hierophant. And then he had a Paladin of the Order of the Wall, High Paladin Vilmon, Covenant of Minoth, Maximum Choir, 2 units of Zealots with the Monolith Bearers, Rack, and a Mechanic. I actually changed the list slightly halfway through testing it to drop the max choir to min choir, and I dropped the rack and the vassal mechanic for a champion of the Order of the Wall, just so I could get some girded out there. It was pretty significant to the way the list functions, but I did have a really good time with this list. Zealots barely ever made attacks, but the Indictors and the Sanctifiers are pretty terrifying in this list, and I think every game... Did I still have 2 Indictors left when I played you, Elias?
Yeah, the only thing that I really killed was the one Sanctifier you gave me for free, and then I killed a bunch of Zealots, and that's really about it. I killed Vilmon.
My Sanctifier placement was the one thing that I really struggled with. It's a little bit too tempting to get them way up there, but when they're really relying on, you know, the buddy system with an Indictor, because that's just kind of how it works out. But the most important thing was trying to figure out Sanctifier placement and also figuring out how to make use of Hallowed Avenger. But by the time I got to my last game, I'd started to figure that out. Because you want to have stuff that can die close enough to trigger that ability, but you also want to have space to be able to move the model to 3 inches. Vilmon is a similar story. He often gets to have his Righteous Anger, like his Vengeance move, but a lot of times he kind of gets jammed up and doesn't get to make much use of it. So those are the 2 things that I would say, like, if you're playing this list, to watch out for is to try to be in a position where you can actually make use of that free 3-inch move, because it's pretty significant when it does work. Also, the other thing I had issues with was the Sanctifiers. I could always get them full up on souls, but I barely ever get more than 2 rounds of action with them. That kind of can be a problem, but most of the time it's fine. By the time the Indictors get to the enemy's army, there's not usually a lot left that can actually kill them, and they tend to attrition pretty well through that. So my 3 games that I won, I won them all on scenario, and my last game I played was less. I played it into actually a ret list, that a CID game with 4 battle engines, and I scored both infantry zones on the last turn to win 9-3. So I had 2 Zealots left. Like, that's how many of them died. But Yeah, don't expect to get works out of the Zealots. On the other hand, though, if the opponent doesn't respect them, and they get to aim with their firebombs, they are real. Because POW 14 firebombs are really good at killing things, especially objects or structures or anything with really low defense. So I had a lot of fun with this list. It felt really dirty to play a lot of the time, but it's a lot of fun.
Glad to hear. So I just actually took a look. I use this fantastic app called Iron Grudge. It lets me take a look at all the people I've gone up against, like all my game records of how I won, how I lost, that sort of thing, who I went up against. And as it turns out, I only played my list once this week. I lied earlier when I said two. So I played Krios 3 into Vlad 3. And my list, for those who do not remember, is Intercessor Krios with two Guardians, two Racks, two Vengers, Acquire of Menoth, a Maximum Idrians with UA, Visgoth, Rovan, and Juvia, Rovan, and Honor Guard, Knights Seneschal, and Anastasia Debray. It's in the Exemplar Interdiction list. It was the most mirror matchup I could ever get for a Kador list. I could have sworn I went up against it twice, but apparently I didn't. So essentially, I played my cavalry caster. He played his cavalry caster. I brought two units of my cavalry. He brought one of his. I brought my partisan unit into the army. He brought his partisan unit. And it did not work out too well for us because, well, not for us. I meant for me. The issue was that it turns out putting my Idrians up to defense 15 is really good, except when it's up against people who have Hand of Fate on them and are mat, I think, 7 or 8, something along those lines, with one attack each. The Chaozzi were able to just kill the Idrians pretty quickly because they have stealth, and I couldn't get in close enough before they just charged me. My cavalry, I spread them out too far, and one of them was separated by a forest, so he couldn't do anything. That's entirely my error. I lost on scenario. He had 7 points. I only was able to score 2 by the end of the game. I'm going to get a little bit of a palate cleanse from Menoth. I feel like every time I play them, I set up, I'm like, yeah, this is going to go great, and then I just do awful. So I'm going to swap over to Convergence for a little bit, see if I can just shake out the bad and hopefully learn from mistakes in a different faction.
Sometimes it's what you need.
I mean, that's best I can do at the moment.
Are you done with your talking about your list, Tim, before I get started?
Yeah, that's the entirety of it.
All right. So the list that I played, I got a game in with Micah on Vassal, which was quite entertaining. My list, for those who don't remember from last week, I played Aurum Legate Lucas de More with Alice, the faction caster attachment. Played it with two Liberators, a Retaliator, and a Suppressor. I also had Prospero, their junior, in the list. He was running a second Suppressor, because that's one of my favorite combos in the faction. I had Hutchuck in there for a little bit of scenario ambushing action. I had a Trancer in there who could either, for a little again, some more scenario presence, he with the Smite, and then having a high defense against guns, he can be a good flag scorer. I have a minimum unit of Crucible Guard Rocket Men with the command attachment, as well as only one gunner. I had a full unit of Crystal Guard Assault Troopers. Those are the medium base melee focus guys. And then I had a unit of Thorn Gudge Mages as my mercenary unit with Adolphus Morley attached to them. Kind of gave him a unit that can do stuff without him too much. He can sit there and heal up Lucas. I managed to win the game on scenario, barely. going up against his list, I realized that I didn't have a good way to kill the Indictors, I believe is what they're called.
Indictors.
Indictors. I thought they were Indictors.
It's okay. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
The sea is silent.
Yeah. With spell ward on them, I couldn't get the full range of debuffs, and my heavies were pretty pillow fested. Actually, pretty much my entire list was pretty pillow fested. The best I could really do was I could get the charging assault troopers in there with PS-15, but even then, the Indictors are still arm 23 normally, or was I?
It's 22, but I had they're almost always 23 versus shooting.
Okay, yeah. They're really hard to shoot down, and they have a lot of good aspects that way going for them. And I couldn't apply disintegration to them, so I knew I was either going to have to try and assassinate or going to try for a scenario push. I accidentally placed my Rocket Men. We were playing on recon, which is important. I placed my Rocketman on the same side of the table as my flag. Kind of on accident, turned out to be a good choice, put them on that flank, because they were able to quickly move up the table and prevent Micah from getting anywhere near my flag, which gave me a constant supply of CPs. I had some of my lights opposite of them, with kind of the unit, with the assault troopers in the middle, which kind of pushed up closer. I used his cloud wall to great effect to kind of allow my army to advance up the middle of the table to kind of really play kind of on his half. Hutchuk didn't do much. He came in and then got surrounded by zealots and then he couldn't really do anything about that. I ended up being able to clear my zone out pretty well. I was able to start to pull ahead on CPs, and I did end up winning on scenario using that zone. But that was a rough match. I don't think that's another match that I could win again. I think Micah probably learned his how to play his heavies in such a way that I wouldn't be able to clear zones and would eventually start losing ground far too quickly to keep up in that match. But other than that, the list worked pretty well. It turned out that the scenario presence I did have in the list was enough. The high defense infantry and the solos and all that was enough to let me kind of start scoring, which ended up working out well.
So one of the most important things that I think both Elias and I learned from that game was the significance of sprays, and because Durst's feet, it required, like, in order for the warrior models to be able to take advantage of it, not only do they have to be base to base with a warjack, they also have to be directly hit. Sprays do not directly hit, so it kind of gets around that, and he was able to use his sprays to pretty great effect. I made a mistake of being a little bit too concerned about what his caster could do offensively, given how much focus he had in his, you know, arc nodes. But I should have done immunity to fire basically every turn, so his suppressors couldn't spray me off the board, and that was a pretty good punish on his part. But it also got around the feet, which meant that that is a very effective way of removing the monolith bearer and just clearing out large amounts of zealots. So
as I remember when I went up against Elias's spray jacks. I don't remember their names either, but they were really good in Idrian's as well, because the sprays also ignore cover and concealment, and that's a very easy way that most people like to buff their defense up against range attacks, and those don't work against sprays. They bypass that as well. The sprays are really good, as it turns out.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing to point out too, especially considering, Tim, how we're we're probably going to be talking about the TEP tonight. Just kind of highlighting again how good a piece of tech that sprays are. Like, of course they have their drawbacks, given that they usually have a little bit more of a finite range, but when applied correctly, they can be devastating.
Yeah. They most certainly are.
That's what I learned from our game, Elias, is that like sprays are a very big punish for that list.
I haven't thought about that. Sprays do also get around a lot of your anti-shooting tech that you have. It isn't going to get around deceleration, but your ability to prevent non-magical sprays is fairly easy for sprays to get around, because they can target one of their own models to let them coincidentally hit the hit your jacks to apply debuffs without to apply the debuffs without actually directly targeting them, which is a nice thing. Against Tim, the time that I played against him, the dual attacks sprays let me get in and then snipe out his important pieces of the Enderman units that effectively taking prey off the table, as well as the mini feet, even though you had already used it. Sprays can be very good. And the fact that we're talking about the TEPs and their sprays, and I haven't faced up against one, but I'm sure it's very, very good, because I'm sure it can do very much the same thing.
Also, in regards to the TEP, since it has sac pond to those turreters, but it can't really do that. That's a really important part of the TEP's defensive package, is the sac pond, and it cannot do that versus sprays. So that's yet another thing that the sprays can get around. Also, sprays can be, like, especially if you have like a high defense model, like the Rocketmen, if there is something that tells you, hey, you can't target something with a ranged attack, the only model that you target with a spray is the model that you center the spray on, and that can be a friendly model. And if it's defense 15, it's pretty likely that you're going to miss it.
16, but yes.
Yeah. But once you kind of get past that 15 range, but it'd be even still be 14 in the back arc, which is pretty substantial. So yeah, it sprays can get around a lot of defensive tech, and can also, a lot of people think, as soon as they see AoEs, they start spacing their stuff, but they kind of forget about it when it comes to sprays. And I've made that mistake against strike tankers a lot, is accidentally giving them really great sprays. And those sprays are nasty when they happen too. Like, I get so distracted by like bombardiers and other like artillery pieces, and then it's like, oh, that random solo has a stupid spray. So yeah. Anyways, Tim, why don't you start talking about Convergence?
So I got into Convergence because I found a sweet deal on the Colossal. I got that for nickels and dimes is what it felt like. But because I got into that, I was like, well, I want to get this caster and this caster, and I want to get these jacks, that sort of thing. So most of the things that I own are built for Destruction Initiative, before Destruction Initiative was even announced. Like, it's just, those are the things that I wanted to play, and I have little to no interest in the units. That being said, today I picked up my second TEP because it was also on sale, and so I decided, okay, well, I think now's the perfect time for me to play more Convergence. It's a very fun faction. I rather enjoy playing it, and today I want to build a list based off of two TEPs. I know they're very meta at the moment, like a lot of people like running it. I know it's a very good piece for reasons we've already discussed, but also because of a lot of other things, like how it has sacrificial pawn to these servitors that also have shield guard because of the theme benefit, that are also replenishing themselves every turn, so on and so forth. Depending on where I put them, I get different die. It's a really good piece, and depending on the caster I bring them with, they get even better. I just have to figure out what caster I want.
All right, so before we get too much farther, I think this would be a great time to introduce what our topics will be for the next several weeks. Something we have kind of been talking about a little bit is we're going to start doing a little bit of a new and returning or even improving players guide to War Machine a little bit. The scene has changed very much in the last few months compared to the way it's been for a very, very long time. Gone are the days are here, buy your favorite unit, and then buy this specific unit because it's just so good. Now it's what theme do you like, what the theme force is. Pretty much the entire faction in every faction is very competitive, and this is something that is kind of new and alien. And if you're not really prepared for when introducing a new player to the game, it might be easy to give them poor advice on buying, because that's the way that you were kind of introduced to the game, and it isn't quite the same way anymore. And if you're just getting into the game, it can be this whole idea of themes is a little bit awkward. So today, before we get into themes, we're actually going to talk about how to build a list. There are multiple different ways to build a list. One of the most relatable to all of us, and probably to most new players, is you have this new model that you want to build a list around. You want to play it. You want to bring its best out, and you want to really make it the best that it can be. So that's what we're going to do today. We all have a huge base model. Tim just got a new second battle engine for Convergence. I believe Mike had just got a brand new huge base in the mail not too long ago. He's excited to use and try out in lists. I have a battle engine that I actually managed to pick up for free off of a trade from a friend. Nice. Who was kind of getting out of that. Out of the faction, so I actually have an AFG now, which I've only played actually on the table like once or twice, and it needs to see more light of day because it's a big model and it's cool and it does cool things. So we're all going to be building in the list style of build around a model. There are other ways to build a list. You build it for a pair, you can build it for a skew, you can build it for an answer. But today we're just going to be building a list around a specific model.
So that in a more concise way, we're going to be talking about, like Elias said, building around a huge base model as kind of a little bit of a theme for maybe the next few sessions. Some of the reason for that is that huge base models have changed a lot throughout the last year and a half. Most of them are not the same as they were entering into Mark 3. There's a lot of, like, almost every battle engine has been changed. They're all the structures that exist in the game, including my Shrine of the Lawgiver, which I got in the mail today. They're a completely new concept to Mark 3. And a lot of the Colossals have changed, and there's kind of a new role for a Colossal that is especially true in Retribution, and that's the support Colossal. And we're going to start with Tim and his Convergence, because the TEP is one of the most iconic battle engines in the game, and especially the double TEP build. And talking about kind of how to build around it and how to avoid some of the pitfalls of running a double huge base list, because they run very differently because of how scenario runs and how the game balances now than they might have 3, 10, or like even 15 months ago.
That is very much so the case. Like, I remember back at the start of Mark 3, like the TEP, which, by the way, the actual name of it is the Transfinite Emergence Projector, but because that's a mouthful, everyone likes to call it the TEP or the boot or the TEP. You know, like all these sorts of nicknames for it. But regardless, I remember back at the beginning of Mark 3, it was the go-to battle engine. Like, if it was the greatest one out there. It had the best rules. And when Privateer Press decided that they wanted to do a revamp of Battle Engines, I think the only difference was they gave it a single hit point, so that it was a prime number.
That's correct.
Yeah, like it was what they wanted to see.
And it remains very near the top of like Battle Engines, but I would say it's up there with Battle Engines like the AFG from Retribution, which Elias was mentioning. And those are two, like, those are two very key Battle Engines that I'm sure we'll be building lists around during this discussion. So let's talk about Destruction Initiative, as that's a very like important place to start. Destruction Initiative is the only theme in Convergence that allows the TEP, and it's important that we talk about that because themes are one of the most integral ways to discuss lists and models anymore. One of the reasons why I can't really talk about the Shrine of the Lawgiver tonight is because I still don't know exactly how it interacts with themes and Protectorate. So unfortunately, I won't be able to add any dojo tonight because that's kind of what I'm waiting for. But in regards to the TEP, it exists in Destruction Initiative, which is the Battle Engine, Warjack, and, or I should say Vector, and Servitor theme for Convergence. So why don't you tell us about that, Tim?
So it has a very funny joke at the very beginning that says that it can include one mercenary solo or one mercenary unit that can work for Convergence. It's a funny joke because they don't have those.
They do. It's Elish Garrity. Is the
and
only
Dragon the option. And Dragon the Black Bastard, but that does not
That's not a tournament legal model, so it's
is
really
not
only
in the
Elish.
Slightest. Yeah, but I mean, even past Elish. That, like, they don't have a single unit to be allowed either. I mean, it's just they added that on for future proofing.
I suspect that there will probably be another, like maybe like a small unit. Similar to Elish, that will exist, that works for
like
everybody.
Like a Dan and Blythe and Bull or something along those lines?
Yeah, or even like, you know, kind of like the Black 13th sort of thing, like where you have like a two or three person character unit, but I digress.
Yeah, that is, in fact, off beside the point. The important points for the theme are every full 20 points of Convergence, Warjacks, Battle Engines, and Structures in the army, you can add 3 Servitor Solos of a single type or 1 Convergence Weapon Crew unit to the army free of cost. Again, there are no Structures or Weapon Crew units in the army yet. The Servitors also in the army gain Shield Guard, which is, because of the previous ability, ridiculous. I'll explain here in a second. The last thing is that your deployment zone is extended by 2 inches. So the important part about the Servitors gaining Shield Guard is twofold. First of all, typically, because of the way that you build this list, I'm going to be bringing in 2 TEPs and maybe the rest Jacks, because there's not going to be a whole lot else that are going to be in the list. I'm going to be bringing 4 or 5, most likely 4 free solos. 3 of them turn to be 1 solo, so I'm bringing with me 12 free models that all have Shield Guard. Also, the TEPs themselves have 3 servitors each that have Shield Guard. That's the first part. The second part that a lot of people don't, I mean, it's a very high play mechanic, but you can actually have a model Shield Guard onto another Shield Guard. So I can have, like, if an AoE is going to go right into the middle of a very congested area, I can have a Shield Guard onto a Shield Guard, Shield Guard onto a Shield Guard, and then Shield Guard again to a spot that is significantly less congested so that only one model will die. All those models just use Shield Guard, but it's how that works.
I'm not 100% sure about that.
I'm fairly sure it is. I've heard about it quite a few times, even from top level players about the ability to chain Shield Guards. It's a little weird and doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
The Daisy Chain basically says that shield guard says when a model is directly hit by an attack, you can have the shield guard take it instead. It is automatically hit. Which then another shield guard can take the hit because it was automatically hit.
Oh, I guess the one thing, though, is that you would be blowing all of your shield guards all at once. That's probably
the downside. That is the case, which is, again, the downside, but it's a lot better than having the whole area just get nuked by, let's just say, because it's common to me, a behemoth.
Sure. Okay, yeah, I guess that's true. That would work that way. You'd just be expending all of your shield guards. The interesting thing, though, is that when we're talking about the TEPs, is that they have their servitors have the option of sack pawning if it targets the TEP, which does not consume their shield guard ability, which is interesting to note.
Yep, it's a very synergistic theme list, because you're going to be bringing things that want to have servitors anyway. The servitors can have a huge array of abilities of what they can do. One of them can get rid of stealth, so that if you're bringing a ranged list, they can actually see things. One of them automatically deals a point of damage, which means if you're bringing like the Iron Mother, who has a spell that says whenever a target warjack takes damage, its controller takes a point of damage, well, now you're just going to nickel and dime the one jack to just kill the caster. It's a very mean tactic that I haven't had on me done personally because of how much I play Protectorate, but I have seen to a Kador buddy of mine. That was a very sad game.
So, yeah, there's four different types of servitors, and all of them have some role that they can play in the army. They all get a second role as well from the Shield Guard ability, so you're getting a lot of value out of those little things. So, also, the important thing to know, too, is that all those are solos, so they can all score flags, so you never have to worry about that. They are also very good, because of their speed and their innate Pathfinder, they're also very good at being contesting pieces. And when you start with, 12 to 16 of them in a list, it's pretty easy for you to just kind of expend one of them, to go contest the zone. So that helps a lot. And I will point out the one flip side of this list is there's only one eligible unit in the list, which are the mechanics. I can't remember what their actual name is. Optifex Directive.
Yeah, those guys, Optifex Directive.
So they're very, they're kind of half mechanic, half some sort of choir. They're both a buff and a repair at the same time. They can grant Pathfinder and magic weapons, or they can repair. They're important because they're your only scoring piece for circular zones outside of your warcaster. Most lists should have one of them in there. Sometimes you'll have two, but most of the time you'll just have one. The great thing about them too is that they can grant magical weapons to the TEP, which is pretty cool.
Incredibly useful against the right lists. Also, I only own one Optifex Directive, which means there will only be one appearing in the list.
I next time I come out to see you, remind me to bring you one, because I actually have three units, and I don't ever see myself having more than two on the table at a time, so let me make sure I get you that extra unit.
So I just realized that they're FAU.
They are.
Why are they FAU? That's amazing.
I've actually made a list to see how many I could fit in it, and it's absurd. But yeah, you'll probably only have two on the table at a time because of the way your points work.
I would appreciate that, actually, because at the moment, I actually, for a lot of lists I make, I have 4 points left over that I just fit another thing of servitors in, which I really don't need to.
Yeah, it's kind of a playtest call whether or not you'll need the second unit, but you're always going to have one unit of those guys in there just for the scenario play. But yeah, let's talk about who wants to take two TPs and get started on that list. The most
The most popular one. Yeah, who do you think is the most popular?
The most popular one has been Axis historically, largely because his feet prevents them from getting engaged in melee, which was something that Tim pre-ramble is something they're susceptible to.
The other thing that he has that can protect them is his Razor Wall, which can prevent a lot of things from getting to them in the first place, like
single wound infantry.
Yeah, which can tie them apart. Tie them up really easily. That being said, outside of Axis, the other two casters that I see the most that have them is Lucant, the Divinity Architect, because his feet gives them +4 armor. He has deceleration. He has all sorts of mean, horrible, awful things that make them really hard to kill. And if you're seeing that as a theme, you might recognize it. The only other caster, oddly enough, the caster that I see the most with duel, like when I was at a tournament with, I went up against her. It was the Iron Mother with 2. It sounded crazy when I went up against it, but it turns out Backlash with that many sprays is really good. Tactical Supremacy on a TEP is really good. Fire Group does not affect it. Nope, never mind. Yeah, no, like those two in and of themselves are really good things to do.
Yeah, the one issue that Iron Mother can have a lot of times is the fact that her battle group is 5-5. Having access to the temp, like I've seen it in Orion lists as well, because Spell Piercer sprays are just ridiculous, and then extra die,
so many dice.
Know, if you needed to roll 6 die for a damage roll, like
That could kill a butcher.
So which caster would you like to talk about?
Sorry, I forgot about this, but the Iron Mother has her little servitors. A, B, they have a target thing takes +2 damage, which makes the TEP's POW 13.
They have Kiss, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry, I was thinking either Axis or Lucant. I'm thinking Axis because I don't play nearly enough of him, and he's awesome.
Sure.
That being said, Lucant was the first caster I ever got into the faction, and I probably have the best track record with him.
Yeah, Lucant, someone who's dabbled a little bit in Convergence, Lucant is a very safe choice, just for anyone out there kind of who might play Convergence and has a little bit of trouble, you know, finding a comfort caster. Lucant is definitely the caster that you should reach for, because it's just a +4 armor feat in D-Cell. D-Cell is incredibly powerful, as I've seen from Durst. But yeah, if we're gonna talk about Axis, let's go ahead and
start with Axis, because that sounds like fun. All right, so he has Battering Ram, Iron Aggression, Onslaught, Razor Wall, and Unstoppable Force. I don't really have a lot of jacks that can work with this too well. I mean, I have Iron Aggression. I have the Invictors for Iron Aggression, but I don't really have a whole lot for Unstoppable Force to take effect.
You mean the Inverters? We've been talking about Protectorate too much.
Oh, you're right. Yep. There's nothing wrong with Invictors. The Inverters, yeah. I mostly have Speed 4 jacks. Typically, he would like to run a bunch of galvanizers because they have their speed 5, they're cheap, and he gets, with the battering ram, he gets to push his enemies out of scenario points while losing very little.
So he can do a lot of different things. One thing with Iron Aggression, Iron Aggression is a very strong spell. It is very good on inverters, but a lot of times what you're actually doing with the inverter is you're actually trying to set it up in a place where it can have a really good counter-charging arc. Because if turns out if you get to attack an enemy model on your opponent's turn and knock them down, it can save a lot of headache for you. So I would recommend one or two inverters with him.
I own two, so that's I'll take two.
Yeah, so let's start there. I think two taps and two inverters is probably. Oh, and you need to take a conservator. Do you want to explain why you need to take that?
The conservator. I actually don't own a conservator. Let me look at what they do.
More
shield guard. That's sweet. Armor.
Are you talking 18? About a corollary, maybe?
Yeah, a corollary. Sorry.
Yeah, of course you need to take a corollary. Sorry, I was looking at the conservator going, I don't know what this jack does. Let me take a look.
It's a cool jack.
Oh, sweet. He has Hand of Vengeance. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, that would actually work out pretty well because of the all the solos, but unfortunately, I do not own one. Hey, something very important to note about Convergence. The jacks in this faction don't have a mat or rat. They have mat and rat equal to their casters, mat and rat. Because of this, Axis being a mat 7, rat 2, I'm probably not going to be bringing a whole lot of ranged jacks. I think the only range jack I would ever want to bring would be a Cypher.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be hitting directly with him anyway. Do I want to bring a Cypher?
I've heard that Cyphers are great with Axis. One of the reasons why is being a melee-oriented caster. The Cypher is great because it's got two POW 18s base.
Oh, yeah.
That's not taking into consideration... the fact that they would get plus 2 strength from his feet. So the other great thing about the Cypher 2 is that you can drift those flare AoEs out, which makes it easier for your teps to hit things. Your teps don't care about stealth because they're sprays, but being able to put that extra die into a damage slot instead of a to-hit slot or increasing your rate of fire... can be pretty cool.
I think I will add in a Cypher because I own one and those things are sweet. All right, so just
I will, I'll also add too that in regards to kind of the defensive aspect of the Cypher, being able to put out AoEs of rough terrain, that can help keep things off of your teps, which I will remind you, they are huge base models. They can be seen from nearly anywhere on the map. There's only a few things that can prevent that.
Only thing that I'm aware of off the top of my head is another huge based model.
Another huge based model or terrain pieces that are more than 5 inches tall.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because a huge based model...
I don't think that would stop any TEP, because I think those things are like 7 inches tall. But
rules
are rules.
Yeah, the rules for a huge based model is... that they are technically 5 inches tall, no matter what height they are, which is, I think it's silly when you get to things like Lilith 3 and Resnik 2, where they're chariots and they're basically the same height as a warjack, but they're technically as tall as, you know, a tep.
The church.
Cyphers are great.
Just as a recap, it's Axis, the corollary, two inverters, a Cypher, two transfinite emergence projectors, the Optifix Directive, and the Destruction Initiative. That is 64 points.
Yeah, so we have 11 more points that we can put in here, and then all of our free little robots.
Oh, so many free robots. Typically, what I like doing is I like to add in the... I own two mitigators, and I do not know how I got them. I just have them. And they are awful with Axis. So typically what I would do is I would add one in, but not today.
Yeah, I would probably add two galvanizers if you have them.
I own one galvanizer, but I'm pretty sure I could pick one up pretty easily.
Yeah, they're $18. But they're worth it.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean,
so
it's always on my list anyway. So I mean,
yeah, if you have to bring a diffuser with him, that's fine. If you bring a galvanizer diffuser,
I only own a galvanizer and two mitigators for light. But that's fine, because I'm pretty sure we have a Galvanizer at Mayhem, and I can get one for pretty cheap. Yeah. After that is 74 out of 75, so it's time to look at the lows. I can have 5.
Yes, and this list, because... 5. Yeah, because Axis has 30 Warjack points, you can go all the way up to 5 slots. So, hey, what do you have...
Real quick, sorry. Instead of a Galvanizer, would you suggest Elish Garrity? Because I actually own him.
Yeah, you could slot him in there. You'd only get 4 free solos, but yeah, that's not a bad idea either. It helps prevent upkeep debuffs and some other things like that. It can also, especially with your knockdown hammers, having the reroll. If you need it, it's pretty substantial.
Oh, Puppet Master, that's sweet. Because something that a lot of people don't realize is just how far-stretching a 10-inch AOE is. A 10-inch spray is. So I can actually... I've attacked a lot of casters with this thing just out of the blue.
Yeah. But,
they're safe, but they're not.
With the volume of fire that you can get, and also how much your dice swings are with the teps, that can be a good target. But... I think especially having the rerolls to hit with a knockdown hammer is
probably
going to be the biggest use of it. So what is your servitor loadout then?
I own a single set of reflex and 2 sets of attunement and 2 sets of illumination. The reason why I went with those is because the reflex servitors, I think, are really good because of advanced deploy and dig in. Countercharge is also a really good thing to have, but my only issue with them is that they cost the most of all the servitors, but they are the most disposable, because after they make a single attack, they explode. That being said, I think the attunement are probably the best because of flare on a stick.
And also, considering, that they don't have gunfighter, but you can get just out of melee range, and a lot of times those flare AoEs can't deviate off of the target, which means that you get basically a +2 to hit for free.
Oh, totally. That being said, I think it should probably be 2 attunement, 1 illumination, and 1 reflex, because reflex servitors are very good to put in the list. Illumination servitors are very good in general for picking off solos or not unit attachments, like the main body, like people who are in charge lanes and stuff.
CA?
Not necessarily the CA, because typically the CAs have hit points, and illumination servitors are not good in the hit points.
But it's still, like, they're still very, they're very good into single wound infantry, especially single wound weapon masters. Very good into shield wall.
Oh, yeah, that definitely.
Yeah, I personally would recommend doubling the elimination, but I think that the reflex servitors are pretty interesting for 2 reasons. One, reason number 1 is that having dug in shield, like with all the shield guards, like you can have a little row of reflex servitors and they won't kill each other when they shield guard AoEs because they're dug in. The other thing, too, is that when you're dealing with a countercharge skew, like Axis can be, and just having a whole field full of like countercharging models, that can be a real pain for your opponent to sort through on their turn. So.
Oh, yeah, totally. All right, so that's a pretty sweet-looking list right there. I will have to glue together my thing as soon as I can, and Wednesday I will play. So, yeah, all right. That looks pretty sweet. Hey, Elias, you said you were going to build a list with a with your AFG.
Yep. That's the plan, is to build a list around an AFG. So we're going to go ahead in Retribution. It's only available in 1 theme for us. So we're going to be building this list in Defenders of Ios, first and foremost. Thankfully, you get free points for the AFG. I only have 1, so I'm going to put 1 in the list for right now. Let's kind of go through what all else you can do with an AFG. So the AFG is pretty good. It starts off, if you haven't faced one against one before, it's got a boostable damage shot. It's got shot type, so it has one shot that boosts damage, has one shot that turns into a 4-inch AoE and leaves rough terrain. And then a third shot, which I'm not actually remember what the third shot is. Momentum. You can knock. That's what it was. He has, it can slam small and medium base models and then knock down large base models. So it has a nice little control element. It has a couple different control elements. And then just a pure damage element as well. It really wants to aim. It has the ability that when it aims, it gains plus 2 inches of range, so it turns into a range 16 gun. That's rate of fire too. And then also alongside the plus 2 to hit. It also gains plus 2 damage as well. So you get plus 2 inches, plus 2 to hit, and plus 2 damage when it aims. So you really want to be standing still with this thing. So a key point. So let's talk about...
I didn't realize that they were range 16, POW 16. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty crazy.
Yeah, range 16, POW 16 boosts the damage if you want. They're pretty nuts. They also have Carapace and Polarity Field. So they're really hard to take off the table. So they're a great defensive piece. They're not very fast. They're only speed 4. So sometimes they have a hard time getting into scenario. Things that you want to do with this... casters that support this... model well are casters that either buff up its accuracy or damage and or damage or can get it into places while still letting it aim as well. So you're talking about Ron with TK, Kalissa with Refuge. We're talking about Ossian with his feet giving him an extra damage die on damage. Syria is kind of interesting. She's really great with just about everything. She's a great caster to play with. She can support the AFG and a few other things. Her feet give it additional die to hit and damage, and then you draw, and then you get to choose a dice to drop. So you can choose the lowest usually, or if you're accidentally like clipping one of your own guys with blast damage, you can choose the highest to make sure you guys try and make sure your own guy that doesn't die to the blast damage. So that's probably the caster I will be going with today, is Assyria, just because she is good with everything. I haven't played her a whole lot in Mark 3, and I kind of want to give her another chance.
Is really good.
And play her a little more. So we're going to be probably playing with Assyria here, just because she's got that... she can really just help out everything.
Hey, real quick, sorry, just as a caster option... I know that you really like liking the idea of Assyria, but I was just looking at some of the other casters, and how would you feel about Thyrin? Yeah, because Thyrin has Spell Piercer to give it blessed and magical weapons, which is awesome, and it turns out he's a melee-oriented caster, so getting the AoEs from the AFG is really good as well. Would that be something that you would be interested in?
Yes, but that would literally turn into the same list that I built like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we already dojoed Thyrin, so let's...
Oh, you're right! Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's okay.
I literally would build the exact same list again, and I don't really want to do that. But Thyrin is another option because Spell Piercer is really great
It is retribution, so we're already talking about basically everything having a magical gun.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about Izzy, because turns out that being able to give things true sight is very important.
Yep, and that's the other part of her feat. I mentioned the similar to signs importance, but actually just a little bit better because you get to choose the dice once you choose crits and stuff if you have. Critical effects. Very nice. She also gains out True Sight on her feet turn, so now your AFG is ignoring stealth as well, and clouds.
And clouds.
Which is very significant. I believe it's also ignoring forest as a whole, if I'm remembering correctly.
No.
Nope.
That's just cloud effects. Iris too.
Nope, that's just cloud effects. It gets to ignore the line of sight, which is too bad. On the front of her card, it is very plain. She's only armor 13, but she is defense 16. She has a mat and rat stat that's pretty low, but it's really irrelevant because she doesn't have any weapons whatsoever. And then she only has 15 hitboxes, so she's really squishy, so we want to make her stay back. But she is focus 8, so she can afford to stay back fairly easily. She does also have flight, which is kind of cute. It comes up a little bit here and there. On the back of her card, she has ancillary attack, which lets her, when with the jacks that she takes, she can, instead of attacking herself, she can make them have another attack out of activation, ranged or melee, which can be useful. She also has Arcane Vortex, so she can give a little bit of spell defense to the things in your backline. You don't really want to be using it in the mid or front line at all, just because then she usually dies because she's only on 13. And then she also has True Sight base on her card, which is very nice. Let's talk about spells, if you guys don't mind. She has Admonition, which is a very nice defensive spell for one of your jacks or for herself. She has a unique to herself spell called Winding Light. This is a non-upkeep, 3-cost spell. It's range 10. It lasts for a round. A target enemy model unit cannot make ranged attacks or magic attacks and suffer -2 death for one round. This means that you can really effectively shut down ranged attacks by your enemy. And because it's not an upkeep, it's very hard to get... Once it's on for that turn, your opponent isn't getting it off the next turn. It's really great at shutting down things like TEPs. Also, shooting Idrians, any of your range-focused infantry units, such as like Gun Mages or Tempest Blazers. All those things really don't want to see a blinding light across the table because you're basically just taking those points away and they're not going to be able to use them if it does get a chance to be applied. So that's something that to keep in mind. She does also have Crusader's Call, which gives +2 inches of movement models that charge, that are beginning a charge in her control area. She has Inviolable Resolve for a nice little armor buff for a model unit. It's +2, and it cannot be pushed be pushed or moved by a slam. And then she also has Velocity, which is a little bit of extra movement because she can't actually charge on her turn because she doesn't have any weapon whatsoever. You'll also notice she doesn't have any spells that give any damage. This is very unique to her. She is the only caster in the game that literally cannot get any work done herself. If she is the last one on the table, you're not killing anything. And you're probably not also the last one on the table, because that's pretty scary. That's her
spell. I think there's two things on the back of her card. What she does have instead is she does have Ancillary Attack at range 3.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool. And then she also has Arcane Vortex, which I've actually been surprised by that a couple times. I actually tried to spell assassinate her, or at least just put a damaging spell on her once, because I had a throwaway spell, and she just was like, nope. Yeah,
that is pretty useful. And then we already talked about her feet, True Sight, and then the similar to Science Importance effect. Where you get to add a dice and then take one away. That is one that you get to choose. So she can support a lot of things. She likes melee units because she makes them faster. She likes guns because she can give them True Sight. She wants an Arc Node, which is making me rethink my list slightly. So I'm going to be rearranging some points here just so I can fit in Upcoming Era. Because I didn't have one in the list originally.
Now, as a side note, whenever I played Assyria, which I did a little bit back in Mark II, and the jack in particular that I'm thinking of has not changed much, I used to run Assyria with a Phoenix, because the Phoenix has everything she wants. It has a really decent range attack, and it also has an Arc Node. Is that be a jack that you'd be interested in?
Normally, yes, but in this list, since we are on the theme of huge bases, and because I can't take Imperatives and Defenders, which I would normally like having with her, because she can't do any work herself, I really like to have a single model that I can throw Inviolable Resolve on, that I can really use to anchor a list. So one of the best options for that is generally a Colossal. So that's one way to take into that. Normally, I'd be looking at Hyperion, because unlike Helios, he does have a solid output. He is, instead of being a support Colossal, he is very much damage oriented. He's got a great big gun that he can that he loves shooting every turn with a fantastic crit ability that he can shoot twice with ancillary attack. But I think I want a little bit more support in this list to help out the AFG. So I'm going to be bringing Helios. Helios is interesting because he has his gun doesn't do any damage. Well, what it does do, it's rate of fire 3. It has an ability. Let me see if I can find it here. He has an ability called Force Grip. It's his tractor beam has Force Grip. What that does is, instead of causing damage, an enemy model hit by this attack can be pushed 3 inches in any direction. He gets to shoot that 3 times normally and 4 times with Assyria. That lets you really play with your opponent's models and get things in a place where you really, really want them to be, which can be very nice. He also has a pretty respectable melee attack at power plus strength 21 base, 23 with an Arcanist. And he is base defense 10, which can be a little deceptive, because he has an ability that Force Barrier, so he's defense, he's a Colossal that's defense 12 against guns, which isn't insignificant when it's a lot of Wrath 6 out there. People generally don't want to be boosting to hit enemy Colossals. Which this one is, it also has a few other abilities. It can actually give itself an additional plus 2 defense every turn by spending a force focus, called Distortion Field. It gains plus 2 defense and Poltergeist. So now your Colossal is base defense 14 against guns, which is pretty gross. And if they miss, they get pushed away. He also has Repulsor Field, so if you're trying to send a heavy into Helios, and with Repulsor Field up, it's only going to be getting usually at most 2 attacks, because the way that they get pushed away by that Repulsor Field. So that's going to be a very strong defensive piece for Assyria to really anchor down a list. And it could also help set up, it could also pull enemies into range of the AFG's Teleforce Cannon. I never actually explained what the AFG meant. It's the Arcantric Force Generator, which is pretty cool. Let's see, for other points in that list, that's exactly 17 points. So I'm thinking I'm going to take 2 units of Houseguard Halberdiers, because they're very, very fast, and Assyria makes them very, very faster with Crusader's Call for I think they can get up to like 15 inches of threat, which is pretty gross. They could hit decently hard, especially on feet turn. I think I'm going to bring out a unit of Stormfall Archers. Well, it's another ranged element. They have POW 12. They have boosted POW 12 damage, or AOEs if you need to kill enemies. You can also snipe themselves to get a lot of distance. The theme grants them reposition 3, which is very nice. Or they can set troops on fire with an attack called Star Strike. It doesn't do any damage, but instead sets an enemy on fire, which is pretty
fire
nice.
Is very good.
They're only rank 5, but with snipe and true sight and the ability to defeat and get that extra accuracy, they can usually hit what they want to hit, which is usually heavy targets. Those 2 units plus AOG gives me exactly 60 points, which is the threshold for the maximum free solos in this list. Again, I want something that's going to last around, so I'm going to bring several very hard to remove models as my free solos. I'm going to be bringing Fey Knight Skirith Issian. He is armor 18. He has Righteous Fury, which gives him plus 2 strength and arm, very similar to the protectorate Jackson in the Faithful Masses theme. He's also a shield guard to help protect Assyria from getting shot to death. He's got a power strength 13 weapon master attack, which does go up, and a power 12 mount, which I think also plus 2 strength and arm, so he does not get additional. His mount does not get stronger. He does go up to a power strength 15 attack when under righteous fury, which is pretty nice. And then he's also a dragoon, so when you kill him, he becomes his mounted form, with 5 boxes that you can usually place out of reach of lower reach models, which is pretty nice. I'm also going to be taking for free Eris, Mage Hunter of Ios. She does gain reposition 3. She's also advanced deploy, defense 16, and stealth. She has a lot of useful abilities that she can do automatic 3 points of damage to things that are really, really high armor. She can disrupt warjacks. She can disrupt casters, which is really funny because when a caster loses all of its focus and then doesn't get any back the next turn, it's a really, really sad warcaster. She can also shoot stuff that's out of line of sight with one of her abilities. She obviously can't do all 3 of those things at the same time because she does have attack types. But the main reason why she's in the list is because she's defense 16 and stealth, which means that I can sit her on a flag and be fairly confident that model isn't going to be very easy to take off the table. Or they're going to be putting far more resources into it than would normally be necessary for a simple solo, because she's that very, very high defense and stealth on top of it. I'm also going to be taking a model called Aelith Veer. He has tough and steady, so he can't be knocked down, which is super nice. So tough, no steady is very nice. He also has an ability called Last Word. When he is disabled by an enemy attack, he gets to make a 3-inch advance and make a free attack, and then tough. And if he toughs, he's not knocked down. So the next time they try to kill him, he gets to make a 3-inch attack, or 3-inch move, and an attack. And then he can make a tough check. And that process can repeat until he actually dies. It's only 5 up tough, so you're not going to get more than 1, maybe 2 out of it. But it is pretty fun when it happens. And he is a power plus strength 12 weapon master with precision strike and cleave, which is pretty nice. He is also hard, which means he doesn't suffer impact attacks or collateral damage, which is pretty funny. He also has reposition 3. He also has some additional abilities for the unit versus vast defenders, which they would drop in here as well. But he is a fun little defensive solo. That's really great. Just being a pain in the butt and being hard to kill and hard to counter. Those are my 3 free solos. Additionally, I'm also taking an Arcanist Mechanic to give a little extra damage to my Warjacks. And I am, of course, taking a Chimera to help apply that Blinding Light, which is very important to the list. So, guys, what do you think about this list?
I think it looks pretty sweet. I don't know how I feel about Aelith Veer. I mean, he seems like a really good forward solo, so you can try to take over the enemy's flag, but I think that the other two are pretty good. If I were in your position, I'd probably swap out Aelith Veer for the unit attachment, the guard dog. Let me look up its name.
The Fey Knight Guardian?
Thank you, the Fey Knight Guardian. Yeah, that guy. In my opinion, Assyria has a very serious problem in that she is defense 16 and armor 13 with 15 hit points. That is very squishy. Like, she can die very quickly to range attacks, and I have killed her with very few range attacks. So I typically try to bring as many shield guards with her as possible because of that reason.
The two things I would to counterpoint that, though, is that you have two huge base models in this list. She is focus 8 and can sit very far back.
That is a fair point.
She's base, unless she needs to score something, she's basically always going to be 12.1 inches up the board.
The only thing I have to say against that is it sounded like Elias really wanted to use an ancillary attack on the Helios, which he would have to be within 3 inches of the Colossal. But even then, you're not wrong. Like, that's still, 18 inches away from it.
If she's 3 inches from the Helios, though, that's a lot of angles are blocked.
You are correct. However, I'm of the opinion that I'm not a perfect player, and my opponent will find a way to get past it.
Yeah, I am always a fan of shields, but Veer is an interesting choice, and I'm always actually a fan of him too, because he's just a nuisance, and he can be a big headache which way the devil.
Oh, hey, I just realized something, by the way. This is probably Tim. But what you can do is you can walk Assyria forward her 6 inches. You can use ancillary attack on the Helios for it to do its thing. And then you can use velocity to get her back 6 inches. So that she is back into safety, like 9 inches away from the Colossal.
This is true. That
is accurate.
And she's your Chimera dies, you're probably also going to have Admonition on her. So if something does try to get into her in melee, she is just going to get out of dodge with flight.
I really don't think that melee is her problem. Like, I think it's pretty much all ranged as her issue, and I mean, outside of that, that is my only complaint for the most part. Outside of that, I think it looks great. Like, the Stormfall Archers are really good. They always do well for me, like, every time that I've run them, at least. The House Guard Halberdiers are sweet, and two units of them cover a lot of ground. The AFG is as good as it always is. I always preferred Iris 1 over Iris 2, and for the longest time, you went with Iris 2 over Iris 1, but now that you can get it for free, she's pretty awesome.
You can get it for free, and her focus ability also does work on Fury now, so you can strip Warbeasts of their Fury, which can mess with enemy Warlocks, being able to it messes with their Fury management. Also, if you shoot the Warlock, they do lose all of their Fury as well. So if you are going in for that assassination run, that is an option you have. It doesn't prevent Warlocks from reaving Fury, but it does get rid of the Fury that turn. And you can strip an enemy model of their Fury, which includes a Warby. So if it's like a strange model gargantuan list that doesn't have a whole lot of other Fury options, you can just sick Eris onto stripping the Fury off the gargantuan of every turn, and then their Warlock isn't getting any Fury, which can be useful at best.
As a quick side note, the theme benefit does also give both Aelith Veer and Iris reposition 3, as well as it gives it to the Stormfall Archers. I've used this offensively with Iris by putting her within the shooting range to disrupt a Warbeast before, and then repoing her back so that I could have things charge in to protect her. Or even one time I walked her into a forest, shot something, and then walked her out of the forest with repo so that she wouldn't be targeted because she was on the other side of it. Very valid options as well. I think the list looks great. I'm excited to hear what you're going to do with it next week.
I haven't played with Assyria a whole lot, so this will be interesting to see. I'm not usually a fan of her because she doesn't do anything. And then she doesn't really do anything offensively herself. And
she is a support caster, that is for certain.
And my experience with House Guard Halberdiers is just they have one turn that's really, really great, and then they kind of die. So we're going to see if I can manage to actually attrition with this list and not just have everything die on me, which is a little bit of a concern with it. At least, personally, she does have a lot of other options. So we will see how this list goes. I like this list quite a bit. All right, and then, Micah, you said that you're still waiting to see if when the dynamic update happens before you start really looking at stuff with lists too much.
Yeah, so just to touch on that really quick, because we're doing a great job on time tonight, and maybe I can wrap up with this. But, I've about the only thing I can really comfortably playtest right now is maybe some different things with Creator's Might for Protectorate. So, yeah, we have four theme forces. Creator's Might, which is a Jack theme. Faithful Masses, which is kind of the Zealot, Paladin, Idrian, Skyhammer theme. Guardians of the Temple, Flame Guard theme. And then Exemplar Interdiction, which is the one that's got the pending updates. Guardians is basically the same as it was, and it's not really going to be having much changes except for the fact that the church is going to be added to it, possibly, but that's an unknown, and it's unknown how that's going to interact with the way that theme is built. So I'm kind of waiting on Guardians list for that reason. There are a ton of possible changes to Exemplar. It's kind of hard to start playing with those when I don't know how the point costs are going to be changing in the near future. So that leaves Creator's Might and Faithful Masses. Faithful Masses has about three different ways it can be built. A couple of what we've talked about here on this podcast. One is with Zealots, which is my Durst list. Another is with Idrians, which I feel very comfortable with my Resnik 2 list that I took to the tournament that we talked about two episodes ago. And then the final one is the Paladin build, which is great with Harbinger, who is a model that is possibly changing. So so that basically just leaves Creator's Might with the Jack theme, which I've kind of been staying away from, and I haven't really found anything that I was really comfortable sharing. But if I do come up with something, maybe I'll look at coming up with a Jack list for next podcast in lieu of waiting for Exemplar stuff to drop. But who knows? Cyrenia is going to be out soon, which means that I'll be able to playtest that list that I'm still holding on to from that podcast. So we'll see.
I am excited for Cyrenia.
As it should be. She seems really nice.
I did pick up Lockweed, so which is that I won't be playing her, but I will be playing her. Have a lot of fun with that. So,
All right. Is there anything we want to mention? Anything else we want to mention?
Yeah, sure. Joseph, for anyone who's in the Midwest, specifically the Iowa area, it's about a month out, but I'm going to be hosting a Steamroller on August 18th at First Turn Games in Cedar Rapids. That will be right after the end of my busy season at work. And that's kind of the first big Steamroller for the fall, which I'm hoping to do then. We'll see how it goes. But every Steamroller this fall that's held at stores in Iowa will be a qualifier for a invitational tournament I'm hoping to do in February next year, the winner of which will get a ticket to MuezzonCon 2019. So
that's just
something to keep in the back of your head. I've Mayhem will be one of the stores that is eligible for that. So I'm working with all the Iowa TOs to kind of to try to make this happen. We'll see how it goes. This is our first year doing it, and pretty exciting, but it's also a lot of work.
I'll be excited to see how it comes up. Unfortunately, I will not be able to join in the fun of the August 18th tournament, as I will be at a wedding in true fully boosted fashion in Minnesota. So I will not be able to attend that day, unfortunately.
I'll see if I can make it. I usually work on Saturday, but I might know a guy.
Yeah. So a lot of the reason I'm doing this is to try to help all of the Iowa metas that are still active kind of support each other and build each other up, kind of like the tournament that the three of us were at a little while back. Just all kind of working together and kind of creating excitement and a little bit of friendly rivalry and see who can be the best in Iowa. I do keep track of all of the games that happen, and I actually do like a little ranking system, a little power ranking system, and I'm hoping to actually make that Iowa wide by the end of the year. But we'll see how that goes. That's a little bit more of a ambitious goal than just trying to get this, you know, tournament's plan. But
I'm excited for you to write down my name and put that at the very bottom of the list.
I doubt it. But there's a lot of it's been a very interesting thing to kind of track over the last year. But we have a lot of new and improving players in the Eastern Iowa meta, and it's been pretty exciting to see some of the players kind of break out of like the bottom third of the bracket and kind of stake their claim in the middle. And it's also been pretty exciting to see for instance, Circle has started out kind of at the on the losing side, because I also keep track of factions. They started out on the bottom of the 13 factions, and they've actually been slowly making their way into the top side, and I think they're like fifth or sixth now, which is pretty cool. That's the faction my wife plays, and she's one of the driving forces for their improvement as a faction in our meta. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see how it comes. Once again, just to reiterate kind of the plans for the future with this podcast, the next several episodes will be focusing on specific factions and themes, kind of how to build a list in that theme, and if you're a new player, what you should do when buying into a faction, or a returning player rebuying into a faction, or improving your current collection that's been gathering dust for the last however long you've been away. So make sure to keep in touch with that. We'll be circling around to the various factions and how to go about that.
It should be noted that even though we will be doing that, I, at least for myself, I don't know if these two will, but I still plan on building a list, playing it, and testing it every week.
Yes, that is what we do.
Yeah, that's the most important thing that we're going to try to do here. We'll try to kind of have a little bit more focus collectively. I'll probably try to figure out something. Well, I was hoping to figure out something with the church, but I might try to figure out a list with the Revelator, since that's my one huge base model that has no question marks around it right now. So, all right. Well, that sounds like a wrap, and we're doing pretty good on time this time, so that's good.
All right. Thank you all for listening, and as always, playtest. switching topics over to War Machine, because that's what I'm excited about. If I got a game in, I got a CID game in the other day, because I've been excited to try out the new G4, because he's one of my favorite casters. He's one of my best painted models. So I just wanted to try out the new stuff. So I tried that. I put a couple Sentinels with him. I tried the new Phoenixes out. I put two of those in a list. And I tried out the Trident as well. It was a lot of fun. Like, I was... Like, having an actual damage buff in faction felt super nice. Especially with the Phoenixes, that I could arc the spell through and then charge the Phoenix in afterwards. That felt super nice. Only having to commit one piece in like that. The Trident deck, I like super spiked on the damage rolls and the actual like shot rolling. So I actually shot a heavy off the table with it, which I don't think I should have. Turns out I was rolling too many dice actually, so that didn't help. But the like even on average damage, it still does like 15 to 20 damage on like a warden, which was pretty nuts. So the CID stuff is really it's really getting to me. Like, I'm super excited to play Red again. Like, I was off for like 2 weeks, and then I'm like, okay, I'm back in 100% retribution time.
Yeah, I've played into that, like I said, I told you guys in the chat, I played into the quad battle engine list, and I was a little underwhelmed. But that it's kind of a something topical that I've been thinking about, and I was talking a little bit about today at work with one of my friends who's kind of taken a small break from the game. But he was talking to me for like the first time in a few weeks about War Machine, and I was kind of talking to him about like how the game has changed. It's mostly because of the scenario packet, like how the scenario packets kind of changed some list builds, because you don't really have. You don't have, like, the scrum in the middle of the table anymore.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And that kind of pushed guns out of the game a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because if you were playing a gun line, like, on the one they used to call Championship Belt.
Yep.
Which I'm trying to see which ones are still in the game. Like,
the Pit 2 is the same, which is Championship Belt. I believe Standoff is the same. Then Spread the Net is still the same. So those three are unchanged. Recon 2 is mostly the same. They just moved those flags in to the center, or towards the inside edge of the zones from like the middle of the outside. And then the two new ones, Mirage and Invasion, are the two completely new ones. Mirage is really stepping people's game up quite a bit. It's really, from the sounds of it, like, you almost half blank. Before, you could, like, almost get away with having a list that wasn't prepared for Spread the Net. Now, with having two scenarios that are... Of
well,
that similar.
Yeah, and in the way that Mirage is different than Spread the Net is that with Spread the Net, you usually could, like, you didn't really have to meaningfully hold your flag. But in Mirage, if you have anything on a flag, you have to be able to hold it.
Yeah, those flags are super close to the. Like, I didn't realize it at first, but those flags are super close to the center of the table.
Like, In a way, I think a lot of times whoever can score the middle flag first usually wins the game. Because in order to score that middle flag, you have to clear out, 4 inches into enemy territory.
Mm-hmm.
You have to push pretty deep into the opponent's line to be able to clear that. Whereas like a zone, like you could just like push things out, but like it's actually pretty hard to clear that middle flag. And like you can throw away stuff to like at your opponent's flag, but like that middle flag, like whoever kind of clears out the bubble around that usually wins the game. And it often isn't until like turn 3 or 4 that happens or starts to happen.
I was going to say, like, scoring meaningfully, like, with a protective bubble around it, with a solo that's not going to be just accidentally killed. You really have to dedicate something to it. I can definitely see that.
I think the terms, like, meaningfully scoring and meaningfully contesting, like, it means a lot more in this pack. The other thing too is that in scenarios like Mirage, guns actually are very valuable because you can use your guns to defend your circle.
Okay.
And just like you can have a unit set up in the back and say, hey, if you walk into this, you're gonna get you're gonna get shot, and then for instance, if you're playing like Gravediggers and you probably set up your long gunners in the circle zone, and you basically are like, You kind of can march them forward, but if anyone runs anything in there, you can probably just delete it, from range.
And the only problem with something like that is the trencher long gunners are so expensive compared to a lot of the other infantry units in
Gravediggers,
but Signar in general, because they're sentinel cost, I think.
In most situations, though, they're usually going to have an angle on that middle flag and an angle on the opponent's far flag.
That's true.
So they can be defensive and then also have some offensive potential, either to deny points or to like ensure that you continue to score points. Because the other thing too is that your zone isn't actually worth, like, in a way, you're not just defending the zone, you're also defending an objective.
Yes.
Like you have to be far enough up where you don't give people like the ability to just do work on your objective for free. Like I think it's now, like, if you looked at that in like, the old dumbbell scenario and then also championship belt, like long gunners don't meaningfully contribute to either of those scenarios. Long gunners start to contribute to scenarios like spread the net, and they can do like decent in recon as well, but I think Mirage is the scenario where you start to see pieces like that actually contribute large amounts of value, because they can be impactful on 4 scenario elements at the same time, both offensively and defensively.
So one of the things that I was thinking about with that, 2016 gave a really good strong leg up to both heavy jack spams as well as like full on gun lines, because with the terrain rolls the way they were. And then 2017 really pushed both of those favorite skews much, much, much more towards being like a balanced list, but your solid melee list still had a very had a very good time in the scenario packet. It's like your doubles, you know, like your double sentinel or triple halberdier list. Your I'm trying to what other big melee, like just melee focused list. Oh, trolls with the champion list. The Band of Brothers. That's what it is.
Band of Heroes.
Yeah, Band of Heroes. Thank you. Band of Brothers was the Mark II theme for us. Then, do you think that 2017 has actually pushed the melee, like your really melee focused list to bring start? Do they really want to start to bring in some more gun pieces with scenarios like Mirage?
Yeah, so that's the other thing too is like I mean this was end of 2017, but like 2018. Well, one thing that I've been noticing is that you can't one trick anymore. And you also can't like. I'm not saying that like perfectly balanced lists that are like 50-50 range and melee are the way to go, but what I would say though is that some lists like Amon Adraza or like Karchev, all the Jacks or things like that, they can really struggle. Like full melee builds, a lot of times can struggle because there's a lot of what Privateer Press is doing now is they are releasing little support solos, little support like pieces, UAs on units that dramatically change the way that a force can play. And you have to, in a lot of situations, you have to be able to scalpel out those pieces. One thing that I learned playing into like playing at MuzonCon was I played my Resnik 2 list, which is very strong into a lot of the Hordes meta that we have out here in Eastern Iowa. And I played it into a Scar 1 Banes list, and it was Scar 1 had, and she had 4 Stalkers. And since I was playing a list that had no guns at all, stalkers have stealth, but like I have reckoners and stuff like that. I have ways to remove them from range if I want to in the faction, but I brought an all melee build, and those stalkers just got to do whatever they wanted on the table, because I couldn't stop them from doing it, and I didn't have like. I traded very badly into that, like because there's a lot of lists that if you don't have a solution for a certain piece, they can just completely hose you. So, like for instance, like if I'm playing any infantry list and I play into like an Immortals brick, and they might have Void Spirits, and then the Void Spirits can just eat half my army. And I are, you know, a lot of times you don't attrition well into mortals anyway. Like, so things like that. And it's very important to have at least a couple guns in a list. And I think that's one of the things we've seen with Kador, with them, the changes they made their Colossals, making them kind of support gun platforms. I think that's been pretty useful for that faction. I think the Church, which I actually just got my my Shrine of the Lawgiver from Bahi today, that's a pretty useful support piece. Like it's a range 14, POW 14, if I'm remembering correctly, True Sight magical gun that RFPs. Like you can't like that's everything that you that's every single role you actually want. Oh, and it's boostable. So it's like, that's you know, countered by the fact that it's immovable, right?
Yeah, like it's, you know where it's at. So
yeah, and it's always going to be there, and you can always see it. Like it, but a piece like that creates pressure on the board, where it creates like defensive pressure. Because it's like it's basically telling you, hey, if you walk your models within 14 inches of this, that I'm going to get a crack at them. And that's kind of how the Sacral Vault works too. It's, you know, it moves pretty slow, but it has the same, it's conceptually similar. There's a lot of times people are just looking at things that are raw offense or raw defense. Like, there's not a lot of defensive value to the church, but like as like a piece in terms of its stats, but it's pretty defensive in what it allows you to do. Like, so for instance, you're in the trenchers with like, you know, with exemplars, and Maxwell Finn can just pop in there and chipper shredder his way through your army. But what the church says is Maxwell Finn can't walk within 14 inches of this, otherwise he just gets destroyed, and it creates a little bit of shelter for your infantry. Like, that's one of the things that, like, I never really thought about that way. I've always been thinking about getting like maximum, like, you know, I want everything to be high octane and just kill the world. But sometimes like the game has become more about board space and less about tabling people.
Yeah, that's something I've definitely noticed.
And
go ahead.
Yeah, so that's kind of how it ties back around. It's like, even you talking about Madrek 1 in like the champions, one of the reasons why that list is good is because often you bring a bomber and a mauler, and bombers have reloadable POW 16 guns, which is pretty substantial. Not only that, Madrek himself has a magical gun that he can snipe and he can ricochet. Like, so his ability to scalpel things out and kind of meaningfully contribute to the attrition game, like from range, kind of, you know, hit the things that are more problematic for the champs. Like, it's not insignificant.
Yeah, that does sound. Just like, that wasn't something I really thought about before, because, like, it's, you're always so focused on the champions and being with the champions that you forget about, like, he has two heavies, and one of those heavies by itself just brings a completely solid range presence. And he is an amazing scalpel with that snipeable
Also, those are two boostable AoEs that, like, since they're POW 16, that's POW 8 blast damage. POW 8 is, you're starting to get into the range. Like, POW 8 boostable can actually kill a lot. The other thing too is that, you know, it might not be super accurate, but since it is boostable and you can snipe it, like, there's like, actually Madrek's range game himself is quite important for the way that he plays, because he has a 3-cost spell that he wants to cast every turn, but he can blood boon off of his ranged attacks. And so with him being able to get meaningful work done from ranged is quite significant to the way that list plays. It really changes, like, the economics of that game. So it's like, just having that one or two, like the one or two preferably magical, but also like boostable guns where you can put it in the place where you need to, like, it is a pretty important thing. Like, even my Zealots list that we workshopped last time, it has 22 guns that I basically never shoot, but it has 22 guns. Mm-hmm. And it turns out in the last game that I played with that, I had a handful of Zealots left, and I was able to use my Paladin Champion and my last Inditer, or my last healthy Inditer, to clear my opponent's circular zone, but it still had the objective in it. And the Zealots, like the four Zealots I had, just sat there and threw all their firebombs at it. So, like, and they're actually great at killing objectives. Like, it's better to throw those attacks there than otherwise.
Yeah,
but yeah.
Their main issue is hitting, right? They're, like, what, red five?
Yeah. Yeah, but when it's def five, you're hitting on not snakes and your dice off four, like,
that's pretty good.
It's the perfect opportunity for Zealot bombs. But that's the other thing too, is like, if you camp Zealots create a bit of pressure too, where they kind of force you to commit into them, because if they get to aim at you, if you just walk up in front of them and you don't kill all of them, they can just aim at you and hit you with POW 14s. Like, it's not a very high percentage play, but like, if you start committing into them, you actually have to commit pretty hard, or you have to wipe them out from range. But hi, Tim.
Hi. How you doing?
I was working.
Doing all right.
It was decent.
It was decent.
It was decent. I mean, it's still pretty awesome because of, it was Mayhem. But I mean, like, it was Friday Night Magic, so thus it was decent.
Sounds good.
Yep. That being said, short story. Mayhem's doing a sale right now where all of their clearance stuff is half off. They just so happen to have a $60 TEP for Convergence. That's now half off for $30. Or should I say, was half off for $30. So now I have two boots. And they are made for walking. That's the end of my story.
That's a good story. Two TEPs, I hear, are pretty good.
Yeah, they're super meta is what I hear. I use the one, it works pretty well, but it always tends to die because people are like, huh, that thing's got to go. So I just need to figure out a way to boost it somehow.
You see... That's for, like, the... So, the AFG is totally that same way. Except when people say, that thing has to go. You can't. Because it's got Carapace and Polarity Shield. So you can't get to it. And it's wonderful.
It's also... I think it's longer range, too. It's, like, range 12 or 14, right?
It's, like, 14 before aiming. When it aims, yeah, it's 60. It's amazing.
The thing about my attempt, though, is... its ability to kind of, so like the thing that the AFG doesn't do is the AFG doesn't ignore like cover and stuff like that.
Dice.
Yeah. So, well, it's dice, but it's also the fact that it's a spray. You can't shield guard that. Like, you can't shield guard. You can't sack pawn. Whereas you can kind of, but being somebody who does run a shield guard in every list, at least you can actually play around with like the AFG and neutralize it. My Durst list, for example, neutralizes an AFG pretty well because it has boundless charge, so it doesn't care about rough terrain, and then it has D-cell, which helps, but then it also has a lot of girded, so you don't really, you're only hitting one target at a time with the AFG into a list like that. So, like, whereas, like, a TEP would just walk up and just kill the entire list by itself.
Yeah, I enjoy using it, but I need to actually sit down and think about a list before, instead of my normal, oh, I think I want to play Convergence today. I have everything with me.
So the important thing is...
I'm sorry, by the way. I don't mean to interrupt in your guys' conversation. It sounds like we're talking about Bullies at Work.
We were just pre-rambling, so it's not really important.
Oh, no, you're good. It was actually super interesting. You're not wrong, by the way. I've had people kill almost all of the Zealots except for two in the UA, and because they didn't fully commit, they came back.
Well, like, anyways, in regards to your, so do you usually lose them to ranged attacks, or do you usually lose them in melee?
Typically, what happens is the only theme list that I can accommodate for is the defensive initiative, and I typically have all of my servitors behind my jacks, my TEP, that sort of stuff. So I typically lose it to charging cavalry.
So, okay.
Threat it hardcore.
So you need to start playing reflex servitors.
I have those.
The reason I say that is because... the great thing about servitors is that you can play them behind or you can play them in front. And I actually tend to, depending on who I'm playing into, I tend to still like bubble wrap the front end of my teps with the servitors in reflex servitors are great for that because they have AD. But, yeah, that would keep cavalry off of them. The other thing, too, is that you typically can still play back a little bit. You have to play a game of not being greedy, basically, with the tep.
Sometimes back is something I need to learn how to do a lot more than I should. I typically position my stuff an inch or two forward than it has to be.
Yeah. And that's something it takes time to figure out. The one really tricky thing, though, is like when you start playing into stuff like Rishjeth Gunlines, which was around for maybe like an 8 or 9 month period of time with great popularity out here in East Iowa. It's really hard to know what to do with like two tabs or like two axioms, because you almost have to be like, well, one of these is gonna die, so I need to just basically commit all my servitors to one side of the board, because if you don't, like the way, like with the turtles and everything, it's just really easy for them to basically pick one of those huge base models and just light it up. You're like, well, this is the one I'm going to keep. So, yeah, that can be really hard.
Real quick. So, because last time we recorded, I was dead, I'm going to see if we can finish this thing out before midnight. That's my goal.
Yeah, that's a great goal. I actually don't have a list for today. So,
heresy.
There's a reason for that. It's because the dynamic update for Exemplar still hasn't dropped. So I don't know. Like, I'd rather explain on it and talk about it just a little bit because it's good content. But
well, I mean, it should at least like because instead of doing your list, we'll talk about the what we're going to be doing in the future. The theme talk, which I actually super like the idea of us picking essentially a theme and then saying, this is how I would think about it and how I would build into it. And perhaps if you were a newer person, these are the things that I would think into if you were starting from the battle box.
Do we want to go ahead and start that tonight, or do we want to do like kind of like make it more like